live from the internet. It's Faces on the Radio. Good. Right, everybody, I'm Hollister Dixon here with Faces on the Radio. As always, I'm here with Yusuf Hotlani and Ari Himig.
What's up?
That was the replacements at the beginning of the show, the freshly reunited replacements.
That's right, first shows in 22 years for Tommy Stinson and Paul Westerberg, coming up in Chicago, Denver, and Toronto, and I'm sure there will be tour dates to follow.
Fingers crossed.
Honestly, this is a band I would road trip for. Like we talked.
This is a destination band.
This is the Rolling Stones of like this generation.
Yeah,
like,
but you know the funny thing is, the Replacements are a band that's probably not going to be a destination band. They're gonna probably go on a big tour because they don't need to play. They're gonna play like the Wonder, the Crystal, or maybe the Schnitz or something like that.
They can make more money traveling around
because that's I think that they will travel around. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's not right. gonna
there's
be
there's a lot of reasons for them to travel around. Like yeah. people all over the country have been waiting to see them.
Yeah,
since they broke
totally.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah. Man,
I can see
I'm
like sellout shows in every fucking town they hit.
Yeah. I read some great pieces on the Replacements this week, and it just like further reinforced how much I love that band.
Oh, absolutely.
I had a couple of spin pieces that they did. One is an interview with Bob Stinson from the early 90s before
yeah,
he passed. It's a tremendous article. And then there's a one from like maybe a few years ago where they talk about the Replacements' legacy.
Tommy Stinson was actually recently on Mark Maron's podcast.
I haven't listened to it yet.
Yes, I was. I've got
really
it.
I need to listen to that. Yeah. I actually literally listened to this. Yusuf and I were at I went to see the Bats, which we'll talk about in a second.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
after
man.
The Bats, the Replacements were on the speakers at Bunk Bar for a good
That's
40
a
minutes.
A while,
so.
Dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like
was this before
thing.
Or after the announcement?
It was before the announcement.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which I was going to get to. Like, this was, like, the night before.
Yeah.
This was, like, 18 hours before the announcement. Because that news broke at about 9 o'clock on Wednesday.
I woke up the next day and I was like,
"That's
whoa.
Dude, this honestly feels like when Pavement got back together.
A little bit. Yeah,
because
yeah,
it's that
yeah,
band that you
video.
Never got the chance to see that just
yeah.
like broke up because they broke up. That
right.
you just you've got
granted,
the chance.
Granted,
I think the Replacements have like a pretty tortured history, and like I think this is an almost chance for them to like reassess themselves and their legacy.
It's awesome to me.
I think every band deserves a proper farewell, and I don't know if like the Replacements have like. A pretty mixed legacy when it comes to like the way they treated their shows and stuff. It's
oh,
part of the like the
that was some clusterfuck
and the myth of the Replacements for sure. Absolutely.
Have you heard the story about their Portland show?
I'm sure
everybody.
I actually
have. They have a song called "Sorry Portland."
Yeah, which says everything you need to know. Like
oh my God.
They played a show in Portland in like mid '80s or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember. And it was so bad that it ended early because they were so like
embarrassed,
pissed drunk.
Oh my god!
And they recorded a song called Portland. Yeah. And at the very, and it's a good song. And at the very,
I'm sorry, Portland.
Yeah, at the very end, it's like, sorry, Portland. Yeah.
Dude, that's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that song. Jesus.
Yeah, it's good. You know, actually, this brings back some memories. I don't think I ever told you guys, but a couple, no, yeah, it was like 2 years ago. I saw the Replacements documentary.
Yeah, I need to see that.
Which
it's on YouTube. I still need to see it.
Yeah, at the Baghdad theater.
I mean, we're going to do a whole episode on documentaries. We should almost have like a film marathon, the three of us.
Oh, absolutely.
And like watch that documentary.
We need to watch I Am Tying to Break Your Heart.
There's a Big Star documentary that's on its way. Yeah. It looks really, really good.
What's it called?
And Big Star was, you know, a pretty big influence on the Replacements, too. And the Replacements, in turn, were a pretty big influence on bands like Wilco and stuff. If not directly musically, in attitude, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it's called, but Big Star gunning for that number one spot.
And, of course, the Replacements have a song called Alex Chilton.
Exactly.
So, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it's kind of like circle. It's kind of like Minor Threat and, oh my god, why am I forgetting the name of Henry Rollins' band?
Black you mean Flag? You mean that band?
Yeah.
Black Flag.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like, it's that kind of symbiotic relationship where one kind of led to the other, I feel like. I always kind of tied Black Flag and Minor Threat together just a little bit.
Well, I mean, Henry and Ian are best friends.
Yeah.
But, like, aside from that.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Fucking Replacements documentaries. So, yeah. And we're at Bunk, and I'm hearing these stories about Paul Westerberg punching a fan at a show in San Francisco in 2003. This is the story from Matt Brown, the owner of Punk Bar. There's a Paul Westerberg in-store at Virgin Megastore. I don't know if you remember the Virgin Megastore.
I never went to the
Virgin. Yeah, I remember.
It was a major chain that sold records.
Yeah.
Back when that was a thing. And Paul Westerberg does an in-store, and somebody, like, hands him a pair of sunglasses or something like that, and this guy, the front of the stage goes, fucking rock star. And Paul takes off his sunglasses and he says, that's fucking rock and roll star. Or something. And so
my god, that's amazing.
The heckler just kind of warms up to heckling him. and Paul eventually goes, I can still fight, you know. And then he just keeps up. And eventually that leads to Paul, like, coming off the stage and just clocking the guy.
Jesus, you know, from Christ. From the way you tell that story, he kind of had it coming.
The heckler?
Yeah.
No shit, dude. Of course. So, like, the best thing Colin Molloy has ever done is his 33 and a third on the Replacements, which I think is, like, required reading for any music
He's writer, in the documentary.
Any music fan. Yeah.
He's in the documentary,
His book on Let It Be is as much like a personal music exploration memoir as it is a story about the Replacements. I think it's really fucking
I think good. The best 33 and a thirds are the ones where it's like viewing it through the lens of a personal experience.
I haven't read enough of them, but
likewise.
I'm not surprised.
The Radiohead one is atrocious.
The one
on OK Computer.
I heard that the one that on Loveless was pretty bad too.
I never read that one.
Well, so, bottoms up to the Replacements.
Yeah. So
what else happened this week?
A lot.
Actually, let's go to the Kim Deal story.
Kim Deal has left the Pixies.
Yeah.
Why now?
Shocker.
Why now? Like, you know, like,
it's one of those things where, in some ways, from what I understand, her presence in the group and her, like, other projects were almost, like, a hindrance to the Pixies doing anything new.
I don't think
that's, like, I mean, she didn't get kicked out, or at least that's not how they're framing it, but, like, she obviously has so much going on, especially with the Breeders reunion this year, or, like, the Breeders 20th anniversary Last Splash Tour, that, I mean, you know, she's got her own thing to do.
I feel like the Pixies and the Breeders were never quite meant to, like, survive in step with each other, because Pixies only really started rolling when Breeders broke up, and then...
What the fuck are you talking about? Breeders was really a thing, like, right around... when the Pixies broke up.
Yeah, sorry, exactly. sorry. Yeah, I got it reversed. Thank you.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I got confused.
Yeah, sorry, I confused myself a little bit. They kind of have, like, sort of, like, traded back and forth, kind of passed the batons to each other a little bit over the years, so it makes perfect sense that now that the Breeders are back in full force a bit, that she's not with the Pixies anymore.
Yeah, so I wonder what the Pixies will do, like, for a bass player, like, I guess Mike Watt's always available.
Do they...
that would work.
I mean, do they have tour dates scheduled or something?
I'm not sure. Like, supposedly they were supposed to record a fucking record last year, and then...
They never did.
I know, right? So,
I don't think anyone forgets when the Pixies are talking about making a record, because everyone wants another Pixies record.
Yeah, two other major news interviews that were available last week with some older generation icons. Stephen Colbert had Paul McCartney on the show.
Oh, fuck.
And it's really good.
Wow.
And he, Paul does some good songs, too. He's got a few. He does For the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yeah. Whoa!
Yeah.
That's...
He's playing that on this tour for the first time ever.
That's crazy.
And he also does I've Just Seen a Face, which is a great track.
Oh my god, I love that track.
Beatles track. Such a good song. And then he does a couple of Wings songs, because the big thing this year is the, like, re-release of Wings Across America, which was, like, this 1976 live album by Wings. And there's, like, a big DVD that's a live concert from Seattle.
Nice.
And that's been re-released on DVD. And I think Paul's, like, last tour date on this whole thing is July 19th in Seattle.
Day before my birthday.
The other major interview, if you have, like, 1 hour and 44 minutes to spare...
Oh, the Joni, right?
Yeah, the Joni Mitchell interview.
Nice.
She has a lot to say, and she doesn't say much very often. And it's fascinating. It's riveting. I mean, I stayed up till 4 a.m. watching Joni Mitchell rant and rave about various things.
Yeah, what was the framing of this?
She's being honored by the Canadian government this coming week. There's, like, two major days, and so she'll be presented with some, you know, major Canadian honor, which the name of which escapes me. But, so Gian Gomeshi from Q, the show, interviewed her on CBC, or, like, CBC Music. Mm-hmm. It's a video you can watch on YouTube. And she talks a lot about her growing up. I mean, I really don't know much about Joni Mitchell. I've just never really, like, explored her history and everything.
I know I love her music.
Yeah,
but
for sure. That's cool.
Like everybody
does. I know you does, Yusuf.
Everybody has a copy of Blue.
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody
on either CD or vinyl.
I stole my copy from Starbucks.
Yeah, I've got Mingus on vinyl.
Nice.
I know. What was the one that starts with an H? Can't remember which one I've got.
The Hissing of Summer Lawns.
No,
yeah,
it's not.
Oh, Hejra.
That's the one. Yeah, I got that from
that's
old landlord.
One. Oh, dope. I think I might have that.
It's the same landlord that I got my friend Nico Case show poster from.
Sick. So anyway, those two icons are, you know, Paul's always talking about something, but Joni Mitchell.
That's awesome.
Don't hear about that too often.
So,
what shows did you guys go to this week?
Can I talk about mine?
The Method Man Red Man.
I went and saw Method Man and Red Man.
Oh, wow. That was, like, almost a week ago. Yeah, go ahead.
Yusuf, do you remember that horrible Wu-Tang show that we got that we went to last year, last July? Vindicated. It was fucking incredible. The place was half-packed. It was a fucking hotbox in there. There was weed smoke everywhere. Method Man walks on stage with a blunt in his hand. That's how little the security there gave a shit that night. The place was fucking, like, off the hook. They played the song Method Man off the first Wu-Tang record. The place came unhinged. It was so fucking fun.
Where were you standing?
I was standing kinda near the back. I was standing with friend of the show, Colin McLaughlin. I saw him tweeting about it, and I was like, okay, I need to find that motherfucker. So we just kinda stood and watched the show together. It was so much fun. They were so into it. The crowd was so into it. Everything was on point, and it's a shame that the place didn't sell out. It's a shame that it undersold so
much.
Most
people who were with you probably got in for free.
Probably. That's okay. So. They got a show of a lifetime. That was a fucking incredible show. Like, it's far and away made up for that fucking horrible Wu-Tang show that we caught last year.
I don't, like, yeah, that was...
Like, I could almost forget that ever happened because this one was so amazing.
It's easily, like, one of the
worst. I can't gush enough.
Apparently.
I had to leave early just because the weed smoke was just so rank that I was like,
Did Method Man and Red Man start late? Or was it just...
It's like 50 minutes late.
Yeah, I know why.
Why?
I'll tell you later. No, it's not what you think. But anyway, they were. I'll tell you later.
Beforehand,
funny story.
They were supposed to go on at 10. Colin McLaughlin turns to me at like 10:45, and he's like, "Now, why didn't I think a bunch of stoners would start on time at this?" It's like, you know, you're pretty much right.
It's not what you think, but I have a funny story to tell you later.
Okay, great.
Okay, so what's
so anyway,
everyone?
You said when I went to see the Bats Tuesday night.
How was the Bats?
Dude, I couldn't believe I was there. I couldn't believe that they had come to Portland.
This was actually the first time in Portland.
Exactly. The Clean had played here, of course, The Clean featuring Robert Scott. And they were at Holocene.
On my birthday, 2010.
That's right. And I did not see that because I wasn't really listening to The Clean at the time. But, yeah, this is the first time the Bats had played there. And, what's up? Holly's, like, laughing it up here. The Bats are one of my favorite bands of all time. Like, that is almost, like, without question. Because they just have this really unique approach to songwriting and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful harmonies that, like,
hugely
I haven't heard anybody.
Group.
Yeah, and they're
it's amazing
really
how
ridiculously
like,
underrated.
So we're doing labels next week. You want to talk about a label where, like, you can guarantee stuff on it's going to be good. Flying Nun.
Yeah, man.
Everybody knows that name.
Yeah.
Is associated with a certain amount of quality and a certain sound, too, that's, like, been so super influential. Like, cause so I'm watching the Bats, and I'm thinking of, like, oh,
yeah.
Like, I got it so much about a lot of 90s American college rock. So
yeah, no, exactly.
It's like a very Bats influence.
You know, I feel like we've never actually talked about the Bats on the show. I didn't realize there
haven't, been, there, haven't been, there haven't been many, like, opportunities.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, Daddy's Highway, I want to just stress that, like, ever since I bought Daddy's Highway, like, I think two and a half to three years ago, I've listened to it literally, like, at least in full or partially, like, literally almost every single day.
Wow,
like,
really?
It's a... they're so fucking good. The harmonies, the songwriting is so simple. Yeah, like, if you haven't heard Daddy's Highway, please go
and
get it.
I'll have to give that a listen,
because
I've never really listened
to
the Bats at all.
So good. And
I think you'd like, really like the Bats.
Okay.
I think they have a very accessible aesthetic.
They have... there's a number of amazing songs on that album. One of the songs on there is called Miss These Things, which is like one of my favorite songs ever. You'll understand when you hear it. It's just, yeah. And I got to meet Robert Scott after the show, and he was like super nice, and I told him that like listening to their music opened me up to the entire New Zealand music scene.
Oh, yeah,
that's awesome.
And I mean, it's funny because like they're really understated people, like, you know what
yeah.
I mean, they're really soft-spoken and they're nice.
Yeah.
But like I had to like put it plainly to him that like their music was very, very much opened me up to old music that was in that region. I didn't, you know, I wanted him to know that, and he was just really bashful, and he was really
That's
nice.
Good. That's always great.
There's a great picture of the Bats at Multnomah Falls as well. They took
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it
oh,
was,
I haven't seen that.
It's, it's,
cool.
It's the coolest thing ever, because
oh
they look so happy, and one of my favorite things about the show was watching their drummer, who was this kind of heavyset dude, but he was just shaking his head the entire night, like he was totally so into it. It was
That's
awesome.
What I love about bands that never quite got massive critical acclaim and being able to like stand and talk to them is they always seem so humbled by the fact that you're saying your music means something to me.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you realize it, but like your music...
Yeah, you changed my life. You human in front of me, you changed
my
life.
He's like, oh, thank you, you know, yeah, it's good to be here, packed houses on the whole tour, yeah, it's really nice.
I hate to take a step aside, but I feel like every time you do an impression of someone foreign,
it
always
sounds
a little
like Morrissey.
Maybe that's because Morrissey is...
Everyone from Britain, New Zealand, and Australia is Morrissey.
Morrissey's a portmanteau of...
He's
all
a
that.
What?
A what?
I'm getting it.
He speaks the Queen's English.
I don't even know what
Google
words
it.
He just said.
Google
a
it.
Queen's English.
Google it. What else did we go see aside from the Bats?
I saw Josiah Lemming and Jeremy Murphy Wednesday night at Backspace. Josiah Lemming is famous for being on American Idol in 2008.
What, really? Wow.
Doing really,
like,
well for himself.
Famously teared up in the audition, but I've been pretty intrigued by following his career over, like, the last 5 years. And, he's, like, a talented songwriter and like, a talented musician, which is not always true of anyone on American Idol.
I know.
And that was... it was almost like it was the wrong place for him to break big in the way that he deserved And he's just been, like, kind of slugging along in the music industry since then. I've seen him every time he's been in Portland. He played the Hawthorne in 2008. I met him then. We saw him at Barbati's the next year and talked to him. And he also played Alberta Rose Theater. It was crazy to have him at Backspace after, like, just, like, following him for so long. I was like, this is weird.
Is it a good show? Like, a big show?
It wasn't a super big show. He doesn't have a super big following, but they're very loyal. Everybody knows his songs. It was a nice setting, coffee shop, intimate.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool. He was super nice. I think he walked away happy with the experience and everything. And, yeah, some Voodoo Donuts for the road. PDX Pop Now CD release show is at Backspace on Friday. They did the lineup announcement for that show, too. The lineup's looking pretty good. Ramona Falls is playing.
Fuck yeah!
So that's awesome. Brent Knopf was walking around on Friday night at Backspace.
Oh, fuck
making
yeah.
Making me weak in the knees.
Oh, God. He's so dreamy.
Right. And the CD release show itself had Sapient, who played with the live band. Sapient is, I think, I want to say he's a member of Sand People. He's a hip-hop artist. But he played guitar and had a keyboard player and a live drummer. And it was, like, not what I was expecting. I was like, oh, Sapient. First of all, I, like, mistook what member of Sand People he was. So that didn't help. I thought he was the really tall one.
But anyway, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But there he was. And the other Sean Flynn of the Royal, we played, and Wish You Knew, and Summer Cannibals played. They were really good. I think you guys both would really like them.
All right.
Yeah. And the lineup looks really solid. PDX Pop Now.
Just
around the river, man.
So, what's the, like, what are some of the major names that are on the lineup this year, aside from Ramona Falls?
Aside from Ramona Falls, I do not remember much big names on the rest of the lineup. Ila Bamba is playing, Lycanic Mask are playing, The Woolen Men are playing, like Mattress is playing, which is super cool because he's been sort of dormant a bit. So
yeah,
it's cool that he's playing.
That's cool. That's a good 10th anniversary.
Blue Skies for Blackhearts are playing. That's a really good 10th anniversary
show.
Awesome. Yeah, it's tight. So that's exciting.
It's certainly the festival to be that weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
At, you know,
I don't even know of any other festivals
so
that weekend worth going to.
Yeah,
I can't even think.
No,
of
I can't
any,
think of
any competition for PDX Pop Now that weekend at all.
Yeah,
but yeah, so that happened, and then Saturday night at Backspace, The Estranged, Your Rival, The Morals, and
surprisingly,
Awkward Energy played. Those names, incidentally, could all describe Backspace over the years.
I'm kidding.
Awkward Energy, The Morals, Your Rival, The Estranged.
Estranged.
Yeah. It was a funny bill to read, and it was a quasi-going-away show as I begin transition out of my position at Backspace.
Quasi.
It'll be hard to get away from there, but I'm sure not being paid will help.
You'll be able to just be like, you guys don't fucking pay me, I'm out of here.
To talk about the music and to acknowledge, like, the departure of Casey Jarman from our Fair City for a moment.
Who we wanted on our show.
Yeah,
he was supposed
to
be on next week.
We'll have his songwriting partner and label partner, Ben Hubbard, on, hopefully. But The Morals were great. They played with a full band. I don't know if you've ever seen The Morals.
No, I have.
You have?
I think, yeah.
I have.
Yeah, I saw them at the Pavement thing.
Pavement thing.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Ben Johnson played bass. Ben Johnson from the Rainy Saints, World Radiant, etc. And Patrick, who used to be in Dirty Mittens, played drums. So they had a live band. I hadn't seen them with a live band since, like, 2006 or something.
Jesus.
It was awesome. Awkward Energy was really good. Jack dressed up, and then he undressed down to his Eat Skull shirt that he bought at the Bats show on Tuesday. Your Rival was great. They covered Kick Out the Jams, and The Estranged are always great. Talk about Casey Jarman for a second. Casey Jarman, former music editor of Willamette Week, leaving Portland for San Francisco to become the managing editor of The Believer.
Forever.
That makes, so it's awesome, but it kind of makes me sad.
Massive kudos to Casey Jarman. And it was...
that is... That's,
it was like...
That's awesome.
It was like, you know, I'm a sentimental son of a bitch.
I hate that I never met Casey Jarman.
And I met Casey Jarman and Ben Hubbard on October 14th, 2005. At a house show. This was before everything. This was the first time I saw the Shaking Hands. It was before I had a KPSU show. It was before I worked at Backspace, before I was at OPB Music, before Casey was even assistant music editor. This is like before Christ.
Wow, dude.
This is that ancient history. This is how long Casey and Ben and I have been running in tandem and in parallel to everything that has gone on in Portland music for the last 10 years. 8 years now. And so, to like, and Casey and I have celebrated so much together. He's Libra too, so his birthday is right near mine, and we've had birthdays together, and for us to both be transitioning out of our positions in Portland at this time, him to a whole nother situation, in a whole nother city, and me to whatever's next, it was just like a nice continuation of that parallel.
What's and next for REMIC?
I really have, like, so much to thank Casey for, and it's one of those things where it's like now's as good a time as any to thank him for everything, and I guess I'm...
Thank you for being a friend.
I think he understands, so thanks, Casey.
Yeah, I would have loved to have Casey on.
It's a shame. I was really excited. Well, I've been excited for that for a while.
But so
it's okay.
We might be able to have him on.
Next time he's in town.
It's okay. We're getting.
I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he'll be back.
We're getting Ben.
Yeah,
Gibbard.
He'll be back for the
Ben Gibbard
CD release.
We're getting
show.
Ben Gibbard, right?
Yeah, we're getting Ben Gibbard.
yeah, we're getting Ben Hubbard.
Wait, Ben Hubbard?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck that. Oh. No.
No, we need Ben Gibbard on the show.
I'm kidding. I've actually been waiting like a few years to make that joke. So.
Yusuf said it on reserve. Check that one off your list,
dude. What would you have done if you? What would you have done if you had slipped that in and neither of us had noticed that you'd said Ben Gibbard?
Good lord,
that would have bombed.
Then you probably would have just been like, "Well, I'm out of here," and then jumped out the window. Just been like, "That joke's been waiting so long, and it didn't hit."
Anything else, gentlemen?
I bought tickets to see My Bloody Valentine in August, even though I'm not totally certain how I'm getting there. I might be. I think I'm getting there with my friend
John Rao.
I'm gonna find a way to go because I bought a ticket just because
you can always take a train out.
Guess what? That's the same day that No Age Play at Backspace.
Which, woo! You should go to.
I can now announce that
you should go to. You should go to see that for sure.
Yeah,
that's fucking awesome. Holly and I saw No Age at Holocene.
The first
like
time I ever
10
saw
years
no
ago.
That was my very first Holocene show.
The first time I ever saw No Age was at Backspace in like 2006 or early 2007.
This is the first time they've probably come back to Backspace since
it is
then.
Back to Backspace.
Dude, that is going to be...
I'm so stoked!
That's going to be like over capacity even more than Onomatoguchi was.
Onomatoguchi.
Onotamagotchi?
Onotamagotchi.
So, what have we been listening to this week before we get out of here really quick?
I've been listening to... stuff.
I don't know.
I'll talk about in the outro.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about in the outro.
That's fine by me.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
What have you guys been listening to?
I mean, I've been listening to Kanye West, but mostly I've been listening to
the
Boards of No, the Boards
Canada.
Of Canada album.
Yeah.
Because my mail order came in.
Dude, that's
from
such
Bleak.
A rad record.
It's really good. It's very different. It's really dark. It's really desolate. It sounds just like the pictures that are included in the album artwork, because a lot of the pictures have, like...
what does that name mean, Boards of Canada?
It's from the Film Board of Canada.
It's the board that funds, like, documentaries in the Canadian provinces.
The album art depicts a lot of desolate landscapes, like deserts and...
a lot of smog.
No, not smog. It's just mostly deserts, actually.
Well, that cover is very,
The cover is a picture of the San Francisco skyline, like, as a sunrise, which is kind of deceiving, because it's, like, not a very sunrise-y record
No,
at
it's
all.
Not, it's not a very San Francisco record, either.
No, it's not. It sounds perfect if it were included, like, in a documentary that, like, about deserts.
Yeah, it feels vaguely apocalyptic at certain
points.
Yeah, it is. But, like, a different, like, not a Road Warrior apocalypse,
but it's
kind
awesome.
Of like 28
like,
Days Later apocalypse.
It's
very
really,
serene,
really, really
and,
good.
Yeah, I love it.
I've been listening to it nonstop, for the most part. So, yeah, I think that's mostly what I've been listening to.
I listened to the new Michael Cronin record, speaking of records.
Yeah, that Michael Cronin record is
San
really
Francisco
good.
Record, but it's from San Francisco. Yeah, dude's a bro. There's a great article in the San Francisco Weekly from sometime in the last couple months that's worth checking out called The Making of Michael Cronin.
All right.
I think I might have sent it to you guys, but...
I think you might have,
not,
but I'm not sure.
I should. And it's great. He sounds like a really great guy.
Yeah, and the record's really fun.
It is fun. It's not like fun in a trivial way. It's fun.
Yeah, it feels...
It's very well made, well considered, well thought out record.
To be honest, this is going to be an annoying comparison, but it feels like what I was expecting from Christopher Owens' solo record.
That's hilarious. I don't think that's an annoying comparison. That's a really interesting comparison.
It's so breezy and so easygoing. That's not really, there's no pretense. You don't have to, like, dig into it at all. It just, it sits there.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's kind of, it's nice. It's a good record.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to it some more.
Yeah.
There's some good shit on it, and I think he's a keeper.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Anything else before we get to our next song?
Oh, we're not going to talk about Yeezus.
Maybe, like...
What's this one? Anton Adam Zapp?
Anton Zapp is Water. It's a record that I got sent this week. I haven't given it much of a thorough listen, but it's pretty good. It's almost entirely instrumental. It's just... I believe it's one guy.
We can talk about Yeezus in the outro.
Yeah, we'll talk
about
Yeezus in the outro.
Yeezus. It's going to take a lot of time.
Yeah, Kanye West leaked twice this week. His baby was born and the album came out early. Congrats. We'll be right back after this.
That's good.
Everybody.
That was Bruce Springsteen, Cover Me from Born in the USA.
We're talking
iconic album cover.
Exactly.
Yes, we're talking about album covers today.
Album artwork.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Bruce Springsteen covers that are just so, like, ingrained into public consciousness.
Yeah.
Born to Run.
Born to Run immediately comes to mind. Darkness at the Edge of Town.
What makes it work? Who knows? It just does.
Yeah, some album covers just work and some don't. I mean, and the funny thing is, there's not a lot of album covers that are really, like, debated, really. Like, everyone kind of sort of, like, in my eyes, kind of agrees on it a little bit. I rarely, like,
point.
I rarely debate album covers with people.
That's really funny. Because I'm like, so something just blew my mind, which is like, what if that album had been shit? Would anyone remember that album cover?
Probably not.
Are there great album covers, and the albums are shit?
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer?
Yes.
You know, now that you mention it, I can't really think of any awesome covers and great albums, but I can think of, like, awesome albums with shitty covers. I feel like
really?
Here Come the Warm Jets by Eno is not a great cover.
Interesting.
I'm like, wow, that's kind of a clusterfuck of a cover. Yeah, like, when I first saw it, I was like, wait, that's the cover for that?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
That's interesting. So something I wanted to mention that's happening this week is that Thursday it's Hollywood Theater.
Yeah.
They're doing a thing on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Seriously?
Yeah, and like the making of the album and they're breaking down the songs and it's going to be a really cool event. That's obviously one of the most iconic album covers
Of
all time.
If not
me. I'm going to let you finish. But Sgt. Pepper, Peter Blake made one of the best album covers of all time.
Are you kidding? That is like the greatest rock and roll album cover
you think
of
so?
All time.
It's pretty much that and Dark Side.
Do you know why?
Dark Side, yeah.
Wait, what?
Dark Side.
Yeah, of course. Do you know? But do you know why Sgt. Pepper is like the best album cover of all time?
Tell
me. Because it was the first of its kind. Like before Sgt. Pepper, album covers were not nearly as elaborate.
That's such a crazy fucking album cover.
The Beatles took a huge risk, and there's a lot going on in the album cover. But
I mean, we take that for granted. I mean, I look at that today. I'm like, hey, that's a great cover. But you think about it, it's like, wow, that's nuts.
I mean, this was before computer. Graphic.
Yeah, that was like everything in that photo was all there. That's a photograph.
Exactly. Yeah, they had to like they had to get all the cardboard cutouts, the wax statues or whatever.
Madame Tussauds, Beatles.
Yeah,
and then the Beatles themselves in those iconic Sgt. Pepper uniforms. And the Beatles have a lot of great album covers. Revolver.
Abbey Road.
Pretty much every single one of
Rubber Soul.
Rubber Soul. Help. Sure. The Drawing Room Revolver is by Klaus Voormann, who was an old friend of theirs from Hamburg, who also played on some George Harrison solo records. He played bass, and he played bass on John Lennon's records, too.
Let It Be.
I mean...
Yeah. Both Let It Be's, both Replacements and Beatles.
A White Album.
White Album, yeah. I mean, that's like the anti-cover. It's just the Beatles.
Yeah.
Pretty much every single one of their album covers was, like, groundbreaking in some way.
Yeah.
It was, like, iconic in some way.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they're the Beatles. So
I mean, they didn't know how to not be groundbreaking at a lot of points in their career.
I mean, we can talk about Dylan's records because he's had some very great
definitely.
Blood
on the Tracks is one of my favorites.
Blood on the Tracks is a great one. Almost all of them feature his face in one form or another.
I can't really.
Some of them actually feature his own artwork, including.
You know, the funny thing is, it's only his last like three records that don't have him on the cover that I can.
Yeah,
think
that's
of. Like,
that's true.
Like
that's
before that, it was always him.
Because
but like
the last one might have been Time Out of Mind, is a really blurry photograph of him on the cover.
Time Out of Mind and like the one either before or after that, I can't remember what it was called.
So Love and Theft,
and Time Out of Mind.
He's on the cover.
On the cover of both of those.
Yeah, but not Modern Times or Together Through Life. Isn't he on the Together Through Life cover?
No, he's not.
Just that couple in the car.
And
he's not on the cover of Tempest either.
Right. Oh, true. So the last three. Okay, sure. So there's Dylan, but like Highway 61 Revisited.
Yeah, with
the Freewheeling Bob Dylan, that famous shot of him and Suze.
Yeah.
Walking down.
Yeah, I love that cover so much.
Yeah, that's a great cover. That's been often imitated. I mean, you talk about often imitated covers. That's one of them, and some of the Simon and Garfunkel records have been imitated.
Highway 61, of course, like, there's a like, a little section in the 33 and a third book about Highway 61, about the entire, like, composition of that photograph. It especially talks about the t-shirt that Dylan's wearing. It's a motorcycle shirt called Triumph Motorcycles,
I think.
Yeah,
of course.
They're still around.
Yeah, Triumph is
great.
But
yeah, whenever I see Triumph, I, like, instantly connect it with Highway 61, because how can you not after you've seen it?
Yeah, and then Bringing It All Back Home is another great album.
Yeah, that's a great, like, almost... Kind of a timely thing for the psychedelic era because of the magazines are really carefully placed and that, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, Blonde on Blonde, the blurry picture.
I mentioned that a couple of minutes ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up album covers that are controversial in some way. The Blind Faith album cover.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Albums that have been controversial and then had like alternate covers. There are two covers for Is This It by The Strokes. There's an American cover.
Yeah, and the
and there's like the British cover.
Yeah, with the woman's ass on
it. Right, sure.
There was the
Blind Faith one, and of course Lennon and Ono's Two Virgins, which has
the cover of Yesterday and Today, the Butcher cover.
That's right.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
The most infamous album cover of all time.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
yeah,
it would have to be.
You know, I never really did like their alternate cover of Yesterday and Today. It was kind of grim as well because it's them just like hanging out in caskets. But I love the Butcher cover.
I thought those were suitcases.
I always thought they looked like caskets
but
to me.
Paul is like sitting in one, it looks like, in his coffin.
Of course he is.
And leads to all the Polish dead. You know?
Of course he is.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I mean, I always loved the Butcher cover because it's just so... It's them just, like, smiling jovially, covered in blood and guts
and
it's,
like,
fucking horrific.
I know, and I love that. It's so ahead of its time.
The concept is that because the Beatles records were different in America, Capitol was cherry-picking Beatles records released in England to make two records out of them, literally butchering the albums.
Yeah.
That was why that
Yeah, when I first got into Beatles, I was, like, I was looking
Did
at, like...
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
That's why. Yeah. That's what that's about.
I love hate that story. Because I love that that's why they did it, but I hate that they had a reason to do it. Because, like, when I first got into Beatles, I was, like, looking at alternate track listings, and I was like, oh, there's alternate, and I'm like, wait a minute, why are they two different fucking records entirely?
Yeah,
it wasn't
really,
I think Rubber Soul was the first one that didn't have an alternate track listing.
Actually, Revolver was.
Was it Revolver?
Even Rubber Soul was bitch butchered. And another band from that era who had alternate album covers was the Rolling Stones, Beggar's Banquet. Famously has this bathroom urinal with graffiti all over
it. Yeah, which was, like, censored.
Which was censored, and I've got, like, a vinyl version of Beggar's Banquet that just says Beggar's Banquet in italics on the cover.
There was, they were originally meant to use a picture of them having, like, a Beggar's Banquet on
the
cover. But it was used on the inside, I think, instead or something
like
that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. The Stones have some great album covers.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about that for a second. They've got interactive covers.
That's true.
Sticky
yeah.
Fingers.
Oh, I love that
Undercover
Sticky Fingers
cover. Night, I want to say, and a third one. One of the Undercover of Night has stickers that you can rearrange on the album cover.
Yeah,
you've got
Sticky
the copy
Fingers
with
the
Sticky Fingers with the zipper.
I've
that's
got that
right.
On
yeah.
Vinyl.
Yeah. It wasn't cheap either because
I'm
like
sure.
for a long time you couldn't find it in Portland. But
yeah,
like
I figured.
A really
now you can
kind of
find it. What else was I going to say? Tattoo You. I actually really like the album cover for Tattoo You because it looks great on a shirt compared to a lot of
I love your Tattoo You shirt.
You know, compared to a lot of their other and of course Exile on Main Street.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It's just it's not exactly simple, but it is. It's just like a bunch of weird pictures of shit. And
yeah.
A bunch of weird pictures of shit kind of works well,
yeah,
doesn't it? I mean,
it
that
does.
Was that was the Revolver cover.
No, it wasn't. The other imitated cover. There's two iconic covers that look exactly the same. You know what they are?
Which?
Elvis Presley's debut record
and
London Calling.
Calling
by
the
Clash. Yeah.
A lot of groups have like imitated
yeah.
Elvis's
sure.
records after.
But obviously London Calling.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It's the most famous of them.
Paul Simonon smashing that bass.
Oh yeah. Totally.
That's
one
I of
love
the great
cover.
Album covers. What?
You know, I feel like album covers is kind of like in the last like 2 or 3 months kind of been a an unsung refrain of our show because we've talked a decent amount about like Storm Thorgerson
and things
like that. Yeah,
and even Arturo Vega, the Ramones guy who we talked about last week, he passed away. I read more about him this week and he really was basically like the fifth or sixth member of that group.
Oh yeah.
As their merch guy on every show and all this stuff, so and yeah.
Yeah.
It's really tough to say what makes up like a great album cover because I think like we mentioned earlier, like a lot of times, frankly, if the music is good, people are just going to associate it with whatever
yeah,
on the album
yeah,
cover.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway.
An album cover is going to be about as good as the music itself.
I mean, unless like the album cover is like legitimately, you know, cluttered and shit, like you were talking about here from the Warm Jets. Unless it's something like that, but even then, like people will still like find some way to identify with it.
Yeah, like I don't remember what show it was at. I was at Onomatoguchi and there was a guy in a Emergency and I shirt, the Dismemberment.
Yeah,
I never really liked the cover of Emergency and I, but I mean, like, it was just that weird kind of figure. It just, like, black with kind of a brown, that figure in brown, and I was like, wow, that works.
Yeah.
There's ways to kind of change things up a bit and make it work
well. What are some of the bands that, like, opened you guys up to appreciating album art?
Well, you know,
I think it was...
I would just to, like, you talk about an album on a t-shirt, the space that you have to work with. It's what makes vinyl so appealing to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, because it's
being
it's
able
so
to
big.
Have that canvas.
Yeah, no, totally.
Doesn't,
yeah,
like,
it's the difference
at,
between...
Like, the Sgt. Pepper thing on a cassette is like, I need to get my eyes tested, you know? Or even
yeah,
like
it's the difference
MP3
between a postage
cover.
Stamp... And
a painting, basically.
Yeah, and a painting,
yeah.
It's
totally.
Canvas versus postage stamp. Yeah.
It's really
Peel Slowly and See the Velvet Underground's first.
Yes,
yeah, of course.
Velvet Underground and Nico, but yeah,
yeah.
That's a
it's
great
interesting that you mentioned
cover.
The
and that's a Warhol, which he
yeah.
also did Sticky Fingers.
He also did Sticky Fingers. It's interesting that you mentioned the size.
That's why I've,
of,
that's why
of vinyl I, records because like, you see, I began appreciating album art a lot after I started listening to the band. For me, was Nine Inch Nails.
Oh,
because
yes.
like, and I when I was listening to them in the Middle East, they didn't sell records at the time, and it wasn't until like later that I actually ended up buying vinyl records and eventually Nine Inch Nails records too. But like, there's something about their whole not just like the covers of their albums, but like every piece of like photography associated with them is like really carefully designed. They worked with a lot of Russell. I can't remember his Mills, I think, is his last name. And he did the artwork for Downward Spiral, and then they worked with David Carson for The Fragile, who was like in the design world. And if we had Will Babb, a friend of the show, on like he'd be able to tell you.
He'd get
like,
so animated over this.
David Carson was like a very famous designer in the 90s because he had a really brash kind of outlandish style, which was not disciplined at all. But it worked with Nine Inch Nails, and I like. You know, I noticed that, and I eventually looked at their other like artwork that they did at the time. And after I bought Vinyl Records, I could see how much the experience was maximized because of that. But even it's weird because
that's what I want. That's why I brought up the size of canvases because I think that's when you realize the full artist intent and stuff.
It just
in that big a format, basically.
It takes one album or one band for you to like really like realize, wow, this is what can be accomplished, you know, through artwork. These are the kind of messages and impression that you can make. And it's weird because like I still fully appreciated it even with like the smaller CD size, but it was definitely maximized once like, you know, eventually moved on to vinyl.
Yeah.
So
I mean that was a lot. I mean, other than the sound, having a big cover to look at instead of having like. This tiny little photo
this
of
fucking iTunes shit. You guys are iTunes?
Yeah.
We're recording on an iPhone right now.
Do they still make MP3s?
Dude, don't quote my dad.
We've done it so many times.
Okay. But yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, often album covers are just simply a photo of the band, but there are a lot of artists who have gone out of their way not to feature themselves on the album covers. The Smiths are one of those bands.
Yep.
Belle and Sebastian is another one of those bands.
They've actually been on a couple.
Whatever. Not all of them.
Not all of them.
Break, man.
But you their most famous ones definitely don't have.
Yeah.
They were on the cover of Dear Catastrophe, Waitress Together.
Yeah, but as we all know, their returns are diminishing. Anyway, great album cover. We're taking notes here. Ziggy Stardust. The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust by David Bowie. Great album cover.
Bowie also has
some great album covers.
Low is a very famous
one. Is that the one
Station to Station
2?
Station to Station, yeah, that's right. Station to Station I also love because it's basically like I'm on fucking cocaine. Even the fucking sleeve is white.
I feel like the most...
Oh my god, that's Stone Roses record.
Yeah, I was going to say Stone Roses. That's also an iconic album cover. Squire.
John Squire, yeah.
You know, I feel like my favorite album covers are, like, the most simplistic ones.
You mean, like, Unknown Pleasures?
Yeah,
like, Unknown Pleasures? Oh, man, that's...
Talk about a design.
Oh, man.
That's almost as iconic as Dark Side of the Moon by now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, top 50.
Makes it work? What makes it work? It's just a fucking picture of an outer space thing. I can't remember what's proper term.
It's a quasar.
Quasar. Yeah, but it's just a picture of that.
I didn't even know that. I thought it was a Richter scale.
And all it is just like the designer that worked with the band at the time, the very famous.
They basically just stuck it on
Peter
there.
Peter Saville, I think is his name. He basically took that picture from a book and photocopied it and like reversed the coloring and like that was the album cover. But it's like
is it
the most iconic thing of ever, dude.
Yeah,
I don't remember. I'm sure it was one of your friends on Facebook, but they posted a photo of someone wearing a shirt.
Oh, I posted that.
Was it?
I posted that.
It was a person wearing a shirt and it had an Unknown Pleasures shirt on the t-shirt.
Oh yeah, yeah. Alan posted that.
I want that shirt.
That band Led Zeppelin, they've got some good album covers.
Yeah, Houses of the Holy. Led Zeppelin 1.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin 4 is also really,
that's
really
an
famous.
Awful album.
You don't like them?
No.
Fuck you, dude.
You two have some great covers. Joshua Tree, Unforgettable Fire.
Yeah.
They've had a long time
War.
Relationship with
War.
The
War.
War, favorite.
Anti-Carbine. Yeah, War and Boy, same kid. Yeah. Nirvana's Nevermind, speaking of young kids.
Or In Utero for me.
Sure.
Yeah,
Utero's a great cover. What about bands that, like, you know, they made great music, but they never really had a standout cover, really? I feel like R.E.M. was kind of one of those
That's
bands.
That's funny, I was thinking
about
that.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, everyone kind of knows the cover of Automatic for the People, but that's really the only one that I can really, like, that's one of the only...
Unknown Pleasures.
Yeah.
Here's Murmur by R.E.M.
Which I think is a good
You know, they made good covers, but like none
cover?
Of them feel iconic.
I think it's
I think you're right. I think this might be the most iconic because
of theirs, yeah.
And it's also, I mean, that's their debut, right?
We've got Introducing
here.
We're flipping through
my 33 and a third collection.
This is an iconic album.
Oh yeah, In the Aeroplane
course,
Over the Sea. Doolittle.
I think they might be guilty of never having a truly great album cover.
That's very much fair.
Here's Highway 61 Revisited. This is, you know...
That's,
Master of Reality.
Yeah, of course. No, that's pretty... I
and
think that's
Reign
iconic.
Of Terror.
You think it's iconic?
Yeah, I do.
Reign of Blood.
Yeah. Reign of Blood. Reign of Terror.
What?
Were these in alphabetical order?
No, they're not. Okay. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it after the show.
Cool.
We're very much using our space around us at this moment in time.
This isn't a very visual show, but Yusuf's got a lot of records, so I'm going to look through them and shout out some names.
Oh my God.
I love these ones here. I'm going to skip Amadeus, but we've got this one. This is Primal Scream.
I have no idea what that is.
That's something that...
The
Aria, those are all the records I haven't listened to yet.
Yeah, these are shit. Mozart?
Is that the soundtrack to The Sting?
Pet Shop Boys. That is a beautiful looking album.
Please.
Like,
please.
Look at how much space they have.
That's a postage stamp.
How little of it they used. That's cute.
In our little bit of note taking, I wrote down The Earth Is Not Cold.
Oh my God, they have so many great albums.
Yeah, exactly.
Weasels Ripped My Flesh. That's almost an example of, like, I enjoy their album covers more than I enjoy their music.
I can agree with that a little bit.
You don't like Zappa?
I never really got into Zappa.
The
same
Doors
with Beefheart.
A lot of great iconic covers.
Well, they're
Morrison Hotel.
Yeah.
The debut album, I think, is one of the great album covers.
Toto. Watch out.
Oh, Clockwork Orange.
Soundtrack. Yeah.
Exorcist.
Soundtrack. That's a pretty solid Stones cover for big hits, High Tide and Greengrass. Queen, do they have good covers?
Tijuana Brass!
Yeah.
That's, of course,
Whipped Cream and Other Delights.
She lives in Longview.
Yeah,
the girl on the cover.
Yeah, are these in alphabetical order?
No.
Oh, they're just things he's put in a pile.
Keep going. Let's go. Let's do this.
Sit back down.
Who else? I'm talking.
One of the...
some bands. The Flaming Lips have some album covers.
Yeah, they do.
Are they any good?
Yes, they are. I would say that the covers for The Soft Bulletin and Yoshimi Battle of the Pink Robots, both very good covers that I've always really, really liked a lot.
This is a good one.
Interpol, Toronto Bright Lights.
Let's talk about Radiohead.
Oh, yes, Mr. Stanley Donwood, arguably the seventh member of Radiohead.
Of course,
Donwood or Dorwood?
Donwood.
Chalky, of course, which is...
Yeah, I mean, he's done all of their album covers, hasn't he? And they've all been, you know, very good album covers. I believe so.
No, Pablo Honey was not a good album cover.
No, I mean, Pablo Honey was
definitely, like, not a good album cover, but I like Pablo Honey, the album, so fuck you.
Don't fuck me!
No, it's true, dude. It is a good album.
I can't stand that record.
Well, then you need to, like,
I prefer
him.
I think it's a misunderstood record.
It is a misunderstood record.
Because everything that came after it was, you know, blah, blah, fucking blah, but, like, a lot of the essentials are...
You know,
I really like a lot of the songs on that record.
Even aside from Creep, there's some really good songs on that.
That one has Stop Whispering, which is a great track. I've always liked.
Come on, Holly, give it a shot. Go home and listen to it a few times.
You act like I've never listened to Pablo Honey.
Because you probably haven't as many times as you probably should.
I've listened to it a lot of times.
It is a good album. It does not have a good album cover though. That is like
that's a really bad cover. One of the things that I wrote down was the cover of Explosions in the Sky, The Earth Is Not a Cold Dead Place, which is just the phrase "The Earth Is Not a Cold Dead Place."
Yeah, yeah.
I remember seeing that.
That one and Yola Tango's "I'm Not Afraid of You and I'll Beat Your Ass."
That was
same
pretty
thing.
Good.
Same like.
No, that one wasn't. That one was just like a collage of like colors and things like that.
Well, it reminded me of it in some way.
Fair enough.
How about Steely Dan? Do they have a good album covers?
Let's see. Asia is definitely a great album cover.
Yeah.
Can't Buy a Thrill is like so bad that it's good. But pretty much everything else, not really.
Not really.
A lot of their album covers are kind of ugly, frankly.
That's funny.
It's true.
Damn the Torpedoes.
Yeah.
A album cover.
It's just a picture of
Tom
Buddy.
Daydream Nation.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. Or
five on that one.
Yeah, or
any of those. Washing Machine.
Goo.
Sister.
Yes. Sonic Nurse.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah, they had some really fucking good covers.
Definitely.
Confusion is Sex was a pretty like bleak one.
Metallica,
Master of Puppets, or Black Album.
Ride the Lightning as well, Kill 'Em All.
Yeah.
See, those are
or
three.
Load.
No.
Well, actually, load because it's just kind of like
the concept is cooler than the actual like picture.
So, it feels like it's like you look at it and you're like, oh, that album
Magnetic
is definitely
Fields.
Called Loads.
Some Six, of them, yeah. Well, 69 Love Songs.
Bad
that's
album
it.
Covers that you truly dislike, or do you? That Blink, I think it's like this one Blink 82 Enema of the State album cover.
Yeah, that one's pretty
that
bad. That's the one with the nurse on it. Yeah,
probably.
Who looks like a crackhead these days?
A little bit.
Other awful album covers.
The one that I can think of right off the top of my head, I wish Darren Hicks were here for this, but the most recent Twin Door Cinema Club record is really fucking bad.
There's a whole like Pitchfork does that annually.
They worst album covers of the year.
Which it's I admit, man, it's actually kind of
it's always fun.
I don't agree with with all their choices, but they have some pretty good ones, frankly, that make you think like, what the fuck were you thinking? Like Chris Brown's like the last album, I think, but what?
I love Deep Web.
My God,
Jimi Hendrix had some really good album covers.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad he didn't do No Love. I'm glad that nobody else ever did No Love Deep Web. Like only Death Grips could have gotten away with
it. How has it taken us this long in the course of music to be like, let's put a cock on our cover?
I mean, John Lennon did it in the 70s.
Yeah, that's true. But like just like,
just a penis with the album title written on it.
I don't even
like that.
That is like a yeah.
I'm sure it's been done before. It just hasn't been done on this big of a scale.
I guess that's true.
Which is much at stake. The Rattle and Hum cover is pretty great.
The what?
The Rattle and Hum.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that one's good.
I have that right here.
Yeah, that's a great fucking cover.
I like a lot of Tom Waits album covers. He's almost always on the cover as well.
He wasn't on Rain Dogs.
Wasn't that him on Red Dogs?
No, I have it, and it's not him. It looks.
Yeah. I really like that concept where Tom Waits wins a trivia show. It's called Rain Dogs Millionaire.
How about anti artwork? Because we talked about the White Album and the Black Album too. There's a lot of examples of that. The most recent example,
Yeezus.
Yeah, the most recent example is Yeezus, which yeah.
Then,
I don't know.
I guess you could also say that In Rainbows kind of was, because the whole concept for the CD itself.
In Rainbows was definitely a full on fucking like artwork record.
Dude. I mean, I feel like it's kind of. I guess it's not anti, but it's kind of in the same vein as Yeezus.
I don't have it there, Arya. It's in like this. I have the special edition, which is up behind there.
Oh, okay.
So right careful here. With it. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm talking the CD version.
Careful.
Fuck. Sorry, I got it.
Yeah, see, that's what I was saying.
Cover. Sit down.
Sit down, Arya.
Dude.
No, I won't. I refuse to sit down.
Let me. Oh yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Fuck off.
Can I look at it?
If you own it, you can look at it anytime you fucking want.
Instead of on the radio.
This is a great album cover.
We are not a visual podcast.
We should actually for this podcast. I think we should include pictures of some of our favorites.
Oh yeah, Merriweather Post Pavilion or the cover for Strawberry Jam.
Feels
Sung Tongs. I guess Centipede Hurts was an okay cover.
Beastie Boys.
Oh, Beastie Boys covers.
Ill Communication.
Paul's Boutique.
Paul's Boutique has like a triple fold-out.
Yeah.
Gatefold cover.
Yeah. Anyway, like I was trying to say, the CD version of In Rainbows, kind of, because the whole concept was you like make your own case for it.
Yeah.
A little bit. That's kind of what one of the leaked promotional bits for Yeezus' cover are right above it. It's a photo of the cover, and above it says, "Please graffiti." Which kind of reminds me of In Rainbows a little bit.
In Rainbows wasn't like...
It was like, you take an old disused jewel case, you stick stickers on it and things like that. It's like
Beck
it's
did that.
Yeah, Beck did that with the information.
That was a better example.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
Of course. There's a lot of iconic jazz album covers, including Chet Baker Sings and...
Blue Train. John Coltrane.
Kind of Blue.
Bitches Brew.
Bitches Brew
is the one, man. That's like a fucking awesome.
I can't even look at that cover because every time I look at it, I'm like, my brain can't process
Inner
this.
Vision, Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think the takeaway from this is that there are a lot of great album covers out there.
There are as many great album covers as there are albums.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great albums, rather.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot that we're like gonna. Like forget to include.
Yeah, a little bit.
This is kind of a big thing.
Yeah. Do you want to talk?
We always take on topics that are like really big.
Do you want to talk like specifically about Storm Thorgerson, because we kind of brought him up and then didn't, and we've talked about him on the show before.
Yeah, we've talked about him before.
Yeah. What is it about his artwork that makes it so iconic?
It completely throws away any sense of like discipline or notion.
It's always
of reality.
So yeah. It's so hyper realistic.
And that's what makes it work.
Yeah, the colors are just
It has no regard for the rules of how we traditionally perceive album covers. I mean, would you ever think that, like, seeing a picture of a guy shaking hands with his flaming clone would work? You wouldn't think that, but you
no.
see how he accomplishes it, and it works better than you could ever imagine.
And it's funny
animals?
Because...
Are you kidding me? A picture of a fucking chemical plant with a pig flying over it?
Yeah.
Just me telling you that. How would you think perceive that?
Like, when if I've never seen animals, like, you say animals, and I'm like, that cover just, like, pops into
yeah,
my head.
Yeah, but when you see that, you instantly recognize it. Just
yeah.
the shape, the color.
Yeah, he's one of those... He's one of those, he's one of those album cover designers who, like, you see something and you're like, oh, that's him. I mean, I see color in the real world, and it's never quite like the color in his album covers. It's bizarre. Like, everything is so oversaturated and so strange.
One of the last record, one of the last album covers that he did that I liked was Deloused in the Comatose.
Oh, Deloused.
Which is, that is an iconic album cover. Like, in terms of bands that came out in that era, that is definitely an iconic album cover to me. He didn't
absolutely.
Do anything else on the... Well, he did, like,
he
the
did,
reverse... He did the reverse picture for that.
Yeah, and
but,
he did the cover of Friends is the Mute, which is my favorite
yeah,
of the two.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good...
Yeah, it's a very
there.
Big topic. We are, of course, on this show, very big fans of big topics. Always have been.
Well, have we covered everything?
Almost. Random Access Memories.
Random Access Memories.
That's a future. That's a future iconic
cover?
Album cover.
What?
It's,
I don't even think I've seen the cover of that album.
It's the
yeah,
robot heads.
It's the robot heads split in half.
I haven't seen
combined.
I mean, Daft Punk were interesting because they had three
I'm
different.
Gonna, I'm gonna bring this out right now to get Arya's like legitimate reaction. I want to see what he thinks.
Uh-oh.
You should come. We should come back over here so it can be heard better on the radio.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm doing.
Radio.
What do you think?
I don't know what to think.
He's like,
I didn't know that was the album cover.
No, it is.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's been all over the promotional shit. Daft Punk's interesting
whatever.
Because their first three records were just
their
name.
Promo photo.
No, well, it was, but then they just like...
I have that as a sticker on my monitor at home.
Well, now you've seen it. But yeah, Daft Punk, I mean, of course, Discovery... Homework. I pretty
yeah.
Was,
it's just the name.
It's just
Daft
the
Punk.
Band name, but like it works.
Yeah. Franz Ferdinand did that with their first record. It was just Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else to add before this gets even more like?
I think
weird?
We covered all. I think we covered all of our favorite album covers. I hope that you're like still listening right now.
This has been a kinetic show.
Yeah, very
yeah,
much so. Hopefully
around.
It translated well. Yeah, lots of moving around. We will be right back, right after this.
Slated.
You guys can talk, I don't care. I seem lost, I look confused. I'm not happy, just amused. Don't ask me to comprehend just what it means to be your friend. Words are passing through my brain. What's to lose and what's to gain? It's time to see how far you reach. It's time to practice. When in doubt, I'm on a walk around the corner, around the block, around to see what's the mistake, around decisions I will make. Well, how long will I have to wait? I only love, I only hate. No, I don't think I'll even try. I'm just gonna say goodbye. Sleeping bags bundled up on chairs, furniture plaster.
Was Jordan Levesque, No Time for Compromise. Jordan Levesque's a great young songwriter, and that's from a mix that'll be aired Tuesday at Someday Incubator at the Star Theater. I'm gonna be... Fuck, my hip is like giving out. I'm I'm gonna be like curating a mix at Someday Incubator every month from here on out, featuring newly recorded, newly released, up and coming, underexposed artists. I'm pretty excited for this mix in particular, and for the project in general. And I'm pleased to be working with Someday Incubator and Mer Larson. And this mix will air Tuesday. And I like music, and I like making
music's cool
mixes. And like, I guess I've always wanted to do something like this, and I've always like talked about doing it. I wanted to make this cassette of that was like a tape mix of friends' work in like 2007. So this will be a start of something good from here on out.
Sounds very good.
Yeah, and No Time for Compromise. Great track from Jordan Levesque. He's very very good lyricist and good piano player. And
sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right.
So what else are you guys up to this week? As always, I'm Arya Mig. You can find me at ariafromtheblock.tumblr.com. On the stations at OPB Music, Wednesdays at 5 a.m., 11 a.m., and 8 p.m. And on Facebook and at Twitter, Imig Arya Imig.
I can
send me a follower request because I'm private.
I can be found at Temporary Life on Twitter. You can find us at facesontheradio.com, and you can find us at facebook.com/livefromtheinternet. Yusuf, where can you be found, sir?
Mostly at Safeway this week. Just this week. Just this week. So yeah, you can find me there.
You can only find him in Meat Space.
Hang up on aisle 7. What else are you guys up to this week?
This week, it's slightly up in the air, but I may be seeing the Dandy Warhols for my very first time, performing 13 Tales of Urban Bohemia in its entirety on Wednesday at the Wonder Ballroom.
From the stage, currently Taylor will probably say, I'm a big deal. I hope to see CSS Wednesday at the Crystal Ballroom.
Courtney Taylor, who I share a birthday with.
I'm sorry. JK, bro's tight. CTT, bro.
He's cool.
Go San Antonio Spurs as the NBA Finals.
The Spurs, the game is today. Actually, the game is like right now.
Yeah,
boy, sports ball.
But also other things that I might be going to. Hopefully on Friday, I'll be seeing South African music legend Hugh Masekela. Fingers crossed.
Wow, where at?
Might go see John Prine on Saturday.
What the fuck? One of the greatest
songwriters of all time.
Where?
He's playing the Oregon Zoo.
Fuck!
Hugh is at the Aladdin. And CSS are at the Crystal. I might go to all those shows. I might go to none of those shows. It's one of those weeks.
We'll let you know next week. Is anyone going to go see that Weezer band this week?
Oh, gosh.
I don't even want to.
No, neither do I. I'm not going to wait 4 fucking hours on one day and then however long the day before then to see a band not in their prime.
That's hilarious.
Like, I was, when it got announced,
I've never seen them?
I've never seen Weezer. And when the thing got announced, for those of you who are listening that don't know, Weezer is playing an event for the opening of the Microsoft store.
Yeah, they're playing Pioneer Cardinal Square on.
Basically, here's how you.
No, they're playing at Pioneer Cardinal Square.
Really?
Yes, yeah. I've read this fucking thing all weekend. You like stand in line on Thursday at the grand opening of the store itself to get tickets.
Yeah. And then the next
the show
day
is at the square the next day.
And then you get in, you wait 2 hours, or you get there 2 hours beforehand, then you get in. Then you wait another 2 hours, and then Weezer plays.
Yeah.
And so you wait 4 hours
changed,
to see the
Weezer.
They
changed all their song lyrics to Microsoft-related things, including, I've got my hashtag, and other things. Another show I might go to
is
Fall Out Boy.
What?
Oh, fuck,
that's right.
How are
you
getting into that?
I forgot that was this week.
You should take me, because I don't even like them.
I'm taking other people.
Hold on. You should take me, because I don't even like them.
Yeah, dude. I want to be there for that stuff.
I don't even like them.
No,
I mean, I like them enough to see them for free. But yeah, I mean, that's like a band that's been around, and now they're back.
For a bit.
For
a second.
For worse.
Yeah.
Not for better or worse, just
a
for
band
worse.
That has more interesting song titles than songs.
That's true.
Yeah,
this ain't a scene, it's an arms race.
No, that's
real,
true.
Champagne for my real friends, real pain for my sham friends.
Oh, man.
Tell that Mickey just made my list of things to do today, which is a Rushmore reference.
Which is a Rushmore reference. That's so... I'll never forget the first time I saw the name Fall Out Boy. I was in Hot Topic at Lloyd Center, and there was this name on the record, and it said Fall Out Boy, and I said,
Where's Radiation Man's record?
That is a Radiation Man reference from The Simpsons, because I just knew that was where they'd gotten it. I saw a Fall Out Boy tribute band at a friend's birthday in January 2007, featuring members of Autistic Youth, Cower, etc. It was at Dumunghama on Gleason at 63rd. R.I.P. Long live. Viva. Sugar, I'm Going Down is one of the best songs of the last decade.
Sugar, We're Going Down?
Yeah, that one too.
Which is one of those songs that has a better misheard lyric than it has an actual lyric.
A loaded Bono complex?
No, a loaded God complex, cocking and pulling. That's the real lyric.
There's a lyric in there about Bono, but it's not really a lyric about Bono.
Yeah, the actual lyric is a loaded God complex, right. But it makes more sense as a loaded gun complex, because the line after that is cock it and pull it. So then who writes this? I don't know. Pete.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm done. I'm done.
Patrick Stump.
Yeah, I think Pete Wentz writes the lyrics. I think Patrick Stump just sings it.
They certainly can write really good song titles, but, like, that's about it.
I once heard something about Morrissey, really? Which feels more true about Fall Out Boy, is that Morrissey writes his song titles first and then the song second.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who said that quote originally?
Who?
Can you just take a guess?
Was it Johnny Marr?
Veteran rock and roller Mr. Elvis Costello said that, actually.
Really?
About Morrissey?
Yes, he said that...
LLS.
He said that Morrissey knows how to write the song titles, but sometimes he forgets to write the song.
Well, it feels more true about Fall Out Boy, and a lot of the bands kind of like Fall Out Boy. Brand New were kind of like that on their first record, and then they got better at writing actual songs. Because they actually had a Rushmore reference on their second record, Transit Gloria, Glory Fades. Just a great song, anyway. So, yeah.
So there's a lot of things up in the air this week. It's a pretty good week. How many times are you going to get to see Weezer and Fall Out Boy in the same week?
What is this, 2003? Yeah,
you know what, if this were 2003, I would be stoked for this week. But since it's 2013, I'm not stoked for that. I'm seeing none of this because it's not 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's two bands that should have quit while
is
they were
ahead. Is it wrong
ahead.
That, like...
Speaking of people who should have quit while they're ahead and still can, Kanye West's new record. Thoughts?
Yeah.
30 seconds each.
Okay,
That's it. That's all the time we have. We hope you were taking notes.
We'll no, Arya's right. We're going to end it on that.
Okay.
Wait, are we actually ending it on that? Hollister Dixon.
Yusuf Hotlani.
Arya Amy.
Where the fuck are my damn croissants? Have a great week.